Welcome, brethren. I want to say I'd heard many years ago about the church hall in Houston. Its fame here is kind of spread out, so I wanted to actually come down and see the church hall here, which is absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's a tremendous blessing to have this and be able to meet here regularly and have such a blessing to have such a beautiful place. But hope you appreciate it. We do. We were awed when we came in and really do appreciate this opportunity. Oh. Share with you another church hall. This one is over in Lilongwe, which is in the capital of Malawi. And hopefully, I don't know if you guys over here can see. If not, the whole thing's going to be on the PowerPoint, so feel free to move over if you'd like to. But this church hall was just built just a couple years ago, and in the latter presentation, Mikkel and Brennan can tell you a little bit more about that church hall. I wanted just to show a picture of that to give you a feel for one of the other ones. Well, brethren, you know, the Apostle Paul, he probably visited more churches than any other writer in the New Testament. And in 1 Corinthians 12, Paul talks about the spiritual gifts in the body of the church, or in the body of Christ, which is the church. Let me start off asking you a question this afternoon. Have you ever woken up in the morning and had a new pain in your body? I'm taking it a few of you have. And it always, you know, I'll wake up sometimes and all of a sudden something hurts and I'm thinking, how could I get injured sleeping? You know, what exactly did I do? I mean, the human body, how come you can wake up and actually feel a pain that you didn't have when you went to bed? But the human body is one of the most amazing designs of God's creation, incredibly complicated, and for our human minds to even comprehend. Each part of the body has a specific purpose. Perfectly designed, working together in unity. And God's church is no different, which is why that's the analogy that the Apostle Paul uses in 1 Corinthians 12. So I'd like to start off this afternoon with passages from 1 Corinthians 12, and I'll have the scriptures up here on screen for you. But it's no wonder God uses this analogy of the human body to describe his church. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 12. 1 Corinthians 12, verse 12. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, and have all been made to drink into one Spirit. For in fact the body is not one member, but many. We have today one part of the body. We will see here, there's one part right here, there's other parts of the body around the world. Let's go on in verse 18. But now God has set the members, each one of them, in the body just as he pleases. It says God's put people where he wants them, as it pleases him. And if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now indeed there are many members, yet one body. During this past Feast of Tabernacles, I had the blessing to go over and spend some time in Malawi. I'd been there several times in the past, but this was a new opportunity for me, and was able to actually take a friend of mine with me. Dr. Bruce Suckling joined me. He's a medical doctor, lives up in Colorado Springs, and it was his first time to that part of the world. And to see it through his eyes was absolutely amazing. But Dr. Suckling and I traveled to Malawi just prior to Atonement, and we spent the time from Atonement through the Sabbath to the first part of the Feast of Tabernacles, and then the second or third day in the feast, then we flew back to the States and joined our families for the rest of the feast. So this afternoon, I would like to share Feast of Tabernacles Malawian style. Well, brethren, we're only 2 months away from the Feast of Tabernacles. It's hard to believe. I looked at the calendar this morning just to verify that, and it's actually almost exactly 2 months from today. Well, I'm going to share, like I said, the Feast of Tabernacles Malawian style. And in doing this, I hope we can gain a better appreciation for the body of Christ that will one day be together in his kingdom, our brothers and sisters, all of us together. First of all, a little background on Malawi. Malawi is located in Southeast Africa, and it's bordered by Mozambique, Tanzania, and Zambia. And it's a tiny country. It's roughly the size, about one-third the size of California, I didn't do a comparison of Texas. I think maybe Brennan and Mikla have, but I'm guessing it's the size of one or two of your counties or something. I don't know, but it's a tiny country. And other than Lake Malawi, which you can see Lake Malawi that borders it on the east side of the country, that is really the only natural resource that this country has, which is one of the reasons nobody has really invaded it. Over the years, different people had colonized it and all quickly left because there was nothing there. The population of Malawi is about 19 million people, and it's one of the poorest, if not the poorest, country on earth. Over three-fourths of the population, or roughly 15 million out of the 19 million people, make less than $1 per day. It's most likely the change you have in your pocket or in your wallet or your billfold or your purse is more than most of these people would see in even a decade from what they could even earn, or maybe a year, I should say, or whatever. But it's very, very poor. And as such, the government and the police corruption is absolutely rampant. There's currently riots going on today because of some of the corruption that's happening in Malawi. The official unemployment rate is 5.9% is correct. The employment rate, unemployment rate, I'm sorry. Realistically, it's probably closer to 59%, but the government reports it's about 5.9%. Private industry requires that people work Monday through Saturday. And so as such, the members there, very difficult for them to hold a job in private industry. Because if they're going to observe the Sabbath, they'll be immediately be terminated, in which there's 100 people right behind them waiting to take that job. But even with the severe poverty, even with a corrupt government, even with extreme unemployment, you know, God has called his family in this part of the world. There's currently two congregations, actually I shouldn't say currently, there were two congregations in Malawi. There's one in the capital of Lilongwe, and there was another one in the city of Blantyre, which was the old capital. But currently there's actually a third congregation, which the Hilgians will talk about that. But members are spread throughout this very long and skinny country, spread quite sporadically across the country. Well, just after the spring holy days last year, the church in Malawi was looking to buy some land, to buy some farm ground. And the reason they wanted to buy this land was they wanted to be able to teach biblical principles in a way that Malawians would understand. Because one thing that in Malawi is when you have something, you use it because tomorrow may not exist. So it's hard to think about future and think about life after that. Well, they found an abandoned groundnut farm, which is a peanut farm, that it had been abandoned, and so they inquired about buying it. And so what made the leadership there in Malawi think about, you know, why buying this land? How was that going to change, and how was that going to instill biblical principles into the church there in Malawi? Well, this came from an inspiration from a man named Phileas Jiri. Phileas and his wife, Chosewe, they live and serve the brethren just across the Malawian border to the west in Chapada, Zambia. And Phileas was just ordained an elder, I believe it's just this past year, if I'm not mistaken. But he's been serving the brethren there in Zambia for quite a while and is very much an inspiration, not only for the members in Zambia, but also in Malawi. They have a border there, but they also speak a common language. And so that unites the two countries. So what's his story, and how did he inspire a Malawian feast with godly principles? Well, several years ago, Zambia was going through a food shortage. This is something that happens quite often in this parts of the world. But they were going through a food shortage, and the church sent money to Zambia so that they could buy food for the members, which is a great cause, and the members, of course, needed that food. But knowing that when the food was gone and the money was gone, that they'd be in the exact same situation they were that day. And so what Phileas decided to do was he decided to use the money to buy some food to make sure that the members were taken care of. And then he had money left over. And what he did is he decided to buy a small plot of land. And he told the members that he'd teach them how to grow their own food. And so teach a person to fish. Don't just give them a fish. Teach them how to fish. And so they could provide for themselves. So through God's blessing and various conservation farming techniques, it involves organic composting. And once again, the Hilgens can go into some of the detail. Specifically, you've got questions on this. They've been over and they've seen the farm over there. But it involves some kind of organic composting. But this land absolutely has flourished. And he taught the youth to come out, to work the land, to work hard. But he insisted on one thing. He insisted you always follow the godly principles. It's very clear. That's the rules. You follow the godly principles, specifically regarding tithing. You give back to God what is His. And that's something that is very, very difficult for members in this part of the world. This was the first real example of the members getting it. What you're seeing here, this is a picture of when they were tithing on their increase. This was a huge issue because, as I mentioned, in this part of the world, you don't know where your next meal is coming from often. And so to sit there and take a tenth of what you have just earned and give that back to God is something that's very, very difficult for people to comprehend. But you can see the blessings they had. And so the members started tithing, started giving back to God, and they continued to be blessed for that. The Malawian and Zambian culture, they have a mindset, and this is something that even the members continue to fight against themselves, but the mindset they have, and they've been taught this really from a youth, that if you need money, you go join a church, or you go to an NGO, a non-government organization, you go to some non-profit and ask for money, and they'll give it to you. And so that's the mindset. It's very difficult to change that mindset where people want to just come just for money. But the Chipita Church in Zambia, they've become basically self-sufficient now. It's something in the past where they've always been reliant upon the West. They've been always reliant on the U.S. to make sure they had the money. And now they pretty much are self-sufficient. They can take care of everything themselves. Periodically, they do have issues that come up. They had a robbery nine months ago, and stole all kinds of stuff. So the church did help them to get back and be able to protect their assets that they have there. But basically, they're self-sufficient. But they also had enough first tithes that they actually bought airtime on a local radio station. So Phileas Cheery, he would take the Beyond Today programs and he would translate them into the local Chichue, my son-in-law and daughter can say this better than I can, into the local language. And this small flock that they had in Chipita, Zambia, began to flourish as they were getting the word out from the tithes of their own members. Well, Brennan and Mikla Hilgen saw this example. They were living in Malawi at the time. They saw this example during one of their visits to the church over in Chipata and established a goal to assist the Malawians to become self-sufficient, to use this as the model. So they went and purchased, I think I got ahead of me, we'll back up, or maybe not. So they went and purchased an 8-acre parcel of land. This was an abandoned farm ground, and they purchased it in Ninkwazi, Malawi. The short man here in the middle, this guy right here, he's the local chief of the village. In Malawi, they still have chiefs in all the different villages, and what the chief says goes. There's no, you don't fight the chief. And so before they could even do this transaction, they had to meet with the chief and talk to him and make sure that the chief approved this. And so they told the chief, explained to him that they wanted the land for a feast site, they wanted it for a youth camp, for an education center, for a farm, and these different ideas that they had, what they saw from Phileas Cheery over in Zambia. And so the chief blessed the idea, and then the land purchase went through. But it could not have gone through unless the chief said yes. This is the official contract. It was the only thing I could read in there is I can see United Church of God here. And basically what I was told this says is that United Church of God purchased this land, this ground on May 21st of 2018. And the description basically says it's from this walking path down to this bush, over towards this tree, back down this other walking path. And that's how it's completely measured. And that's not being facetious. That actually is maybe they can tell us, but it's pretty much what it says. And when you get out there, you actually will see the ground, and you'll see a walking path right down the edge of the property, so you know where your ground is. So the brethren in Malawi were told about the plans for the feast. But they, to attend the feast, there was two requirements that were set in place. First of all, they needed to arrange transport to and from the feast, and they needed to bring their own food. Other than that, everything would be taken care of. And in case they couldn't arrange transport or bring their own food, there would be assistance available for those who needed it. So the church started working together to clear the land and to get ready for the feast. Every Sunday and sometimes during the week for about a four-month period there between May and I guess the end of May till the feast had started, they had work parties out there preparing for the feast. And first they had to clear the land, had to dig up all the weeds, the old plants, remove any stumps they had out there, the weeds. And then they use a tremendous technique called slashing and burning, where they start setting everything on fire. And they burnt the rows. And when we were over at the feast there, Dr. Suckling, you know, during the feast, it's the dry season. So there tends to be a little bit more burning than the wet season. And Dr. Suckling's comment was that the entire country seems like it's on fire. Because no matter where you walk in Malawi, you're going to smell smoke. And it could be somebody cooking, it could be somebody burning something, but there is smoke in the air all the time, especially in the capital where you have multiple millions of people in the capital city, people burning stuff there all the time. I should also explain that Dr. Suckling is a lung doctor, so he deals with lung cancer all the time, so he's sitting there just, you know, absolutely shocked at what he was seeing there. But it got quite smoky, as you can see. When they were having their work party, when the wind stopped blowing, it got so smoky they decided they better stop for a little bit and take a lunch break. But they did that, and the Longwe congregation started really coming together as they were working for a common goal, doing things themselves, doing things Malawian style. They weren't being directed by you know, the U.S., by the Americans. This is something that was really theirs. And they had a common goal and a common purpose. And this wasn't work for an American feast site. This was work for a Feast of Tabernacles site, Malawian style. You know, in the past, we've always had feast sites in foreign countries that have always been exactly like we've done it in the U.S. It's always been in a hotel with a convention center. And a lot of times, even the local brethren could not even afford to stay in the hotels. But the Americans would come and stay there, and they would stay in their other places. So this was going to be a different feast concept. The idea is this was a Malawian feast. And if others want to join, fantastic. But this is really for the Malawian brethren. So construction began on the land after they got it cleared. They started construction with a water tank, a well and a water tank, storage, bathhouse. And I do understand that the Houston congregation had provided some assistance for some of this. So I'd like to say thank you very much. You'll see some pictures here. It was worked out extremely well, but really do appreciate those contributions and the help that was provided as they were working on this. Well, construction was completed just in time for the Feast of Tabernacles. But there's another challenge that the brethren in Malawi faced, and that is the language. While Malawi has two official languages, English and Chichua, some of the brethren only speak Chichua. And many of the brethren, even if they speak English, their comprehension of the English language may not be as that strong. So even that they can converse with you, they may not comprehend. So everything that they've been provided, all the hymnals, all the booklets, everything they have, the Bibles were all in English. And so that was a challenge. So prior to the feast, the Hilgens also started working on and assisting with translating the hymns and also the booklets into the local Chichua language. And I believe they had 27 hymns that they had translated so far. And then you can see the one booklet they started on was the Fundamentals of Beliefs booklet, and that has been translated. So before, when they had church services, they had English hymns, and people that don't speak English were even shy to sing, and even those that did speak English may have even comprehended the words. So after they had these hymns translated, they changed where they started every feast service, every church service now, the first two songs are one of the spoken are sung in Chichua, in the local language. And they belt it out like no one's business. You can hear it down the street. It's amazing. And now they can comprehend the words. They can sing praises to God. It's absolutely amazing to see them in their own language being able to praise God. But as I mentioned, they also have this booklet. And I think at the time of the feast last year, they had just a few copies. They hadn't sent it to a printer yet, but they did have it translated. And they were using this booklet during the feast to have Bible studies where they could do it with their own language and be able to study this booklet. So with all this preparation that took place prior to the Feast of Tabernacles 2018, there was two requirements people had to do, was to get there, coming back, and then also bring their own food. But also they had said that this festival assistance for those who needed it. In 2017, there was 100% of the congregation requested festival assistance. Every single member there needed assistance to get to the feast. And that wasn't just 2017. That was 2017, 2016, 2015. That was every year prior to that. In 2018, there was only 3 members that needed assistance for the feast in 2018. And of those 3, I think there was only one or two was legit. But it was just very few people even needed assistance to be able to attend the feast because they were doing things together. They were doing things right. And this was going to be a Malawian feast. Well, the feast site is located, it's right here, it's in Ninkwazi, and I would spell it, I did spell it because I can barely pronounce it, but I think it's pronounced Ninkwazi. Brendan Micklick can correct me on that. But it's only about 10 miles from the Zambian border, but it's on the far west edge there of Malawi. And this year, the plan was that the members from Zambia and Malawi would actually meet in this part of the world for the feast. As I mentioned, they do speak a common language, use a common language. But in 2018, they'd already made plans, the members in Zambia. They take a 10-hour bus ride to Lusaka, their capital, where they had the feast in 2018. So 2 of the members from Zambia came over, but this year I believe they all are meeting together. When you come onto the feast site, this is the first thing you'll see. This is their tabernacle. This is the church hall. And it's a quite large structure. It's 20 meters by 30 meters, whatever that is in feet. It's converted to someone under 20, whatever it is. But it's a large building made entirely out of sticks and bamboo. And they have an African mud floor, which is a hard, almost like a concrete type of floor in it. The church members put this together, all those bamboo mats here. They had work parties back in Lilongwe, and they put all these mats together during these work parties, working together, building their tabernacle. They hauled all the material to the site, and then they paid the local villagers to actually erect the tabernacle for them that we could use during the feast. The entire cost of the building, rough estimates, anyone? entire cost of the building was $180. It was $150 for all the material, and then it cost them $30 to get it erected. The opening night service, we had solar-powered lights inside, and through all the cracks in the roof, you could see God's full moon shining above. It was absolutely beautiful. However, that night started out, or that evening started out a little nerve-wracking, I will say. I'll explain that a little bit later as to why that happened. But it ended up, it was a beautiful night. The feast had started. When you walk in to the tabernacle, you immediately recognize this is a place where God has placed his name. And it was time to celebrate the feast. And during that opening night message, I was sitting there next to my daughter, and I kept looking at the sign, just thinking, oh, this is so, I just love it. The feast has started. And I'm looking at it. And then finally, something caught my eye, and I started laughing. And I leaned over at Mikla, and I said, you know, I told her, I said, after 50-something years of keeping the feast, this is the first Feast of Tabernacles I've ever attended. And so their English translation sometimes isn't quite as clear as it should be. and apparently even the Chichua is a little bit not like it should, but anyways, the idea was that God had placed his name there. He wasn't in charge of the spelling, but his name was surely there. Services throughout the feast, we always met in the tabernacle there, and it was amazingly cool and comfortable. It was, the temperatures, I don't know, it was quite as hot as it is out here today, but the temperatures definitely were in the close to 90s there, and it's the dry season, so the sun shines from, there's not a cloud in the sky the entire time, and there is a breeze that comes up every afternoon, or pretty much, you know, which just throws the dust around. It's very dusty and hot. But as soon as you walked into the tabernacle, it was amazingly cool with this construction that they had assembled for the tabernacle building. So we met there, and we had about 50 people that opening day. However, as the feast continued, people from the local villages started attending as word started getting out. In this part, everyone kind of has cell phones where they do some texting, but there's really not much way to get word out. And so as word spread, and then from other villages, people would all of a sudden just come walking up and join us for the church service. And so they kept getting larger and larger for every service and every Bible study. More and more people were coming from the local villages. Now the accommodations. So for those of you who have not feast plans yet and are ready for an adventure, okay, the accommodations. I remember my daughter asked me when she knew that Bruce and I were heading over there. She said, "We got two options for you, Dad." She goes, "We can get you a tent." She goes, "Or we can have you build you a booth." And I'm like, "A booth?" I'm like, "That sounds really cool." I said, "Have them build me a booth." I said, "How much is it going to cost me?" And she said, $20. I'm like, "Done. Build me a booth." There was my booth. Actually, Bruce, it only cost me $10 because I shared it with Dr. Suckling. So it was $10. This is what you can get. But my request for the ocean and pool view got denied by the front desk, but it was still just a beautiful place to have the feast. It was, once again, amazingly cool. It's incredible when you're standing here and you would be just dying of sweat and heat. I mean, the heat, and you'd be sweating. As soon as you walk in there, the way it's constructed, it is amazingly cool. The temperature drops probably 15, 20 degrees just walking through that door right there. But so this was our accommodations. It has the African mud floor there, as you can see. I had Bruce tech the, you know, his first question was when I told him we were getting a booth made out of bamboo. He says, "Is it rhino proof?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's rhino proof. Of course." So he's checking the integrity there to make sure it was. He didn't quite believe me. But then they also, we assembled some mosquito nets. And I can tell you right now, two white guys from Colorado should not assemble mosquito nets. We ended up with leftover parts. I didn't know there would be leftover parts for a mosquito net. We had stuff where, like, we don't even know what to do with this. But somehow they told us we had it kind of right, almost. But anyways, it worked for us. The African mud floor is something that what they do is they take the certain kind of soil, and I don't know what the soil is, but they mix it with water, and it's like almost like a clay. And so this lady here, her name is Ketty, she had slept, her and her husband had slept in a tent on the ground the first night, and so then the second day there, then she decides she's going to build an African mud floor. So she gets this mud and mixes it up and then packs it down, and literally within 2 to 3 hours, the sun dries it, and it's like it's hard as rock, it's amazing. So they wanted to move their tent onto this concrete floor instead of the ground. So I wanted to get a picture of that. It was pretty incredible to see this African mud floor. But we had what we called Booth City during the feast. This was a Malawian Booth City. There was about 10 bamboo booths and about 15 tents. That's anywhere from probably two to some of the tents probably had half a dozen or a dozen kids in them and stuff. But this was our Booth City. And it actually became known as UCG Village. As I mentioned, everything around there is all these different villages with different chiefs that run the villages. And this area, even today, is known as UCG Village. That's the nickname. That's if you talk to a local there and ask them where UCG Village is, they'll point you to this farm ground. We had a common kitchen area, and this is where they would have just wood and charcoal to cook with. And then the members erected this bamboo mat fence around there because of that breeze I mentioned about, just to be able to cook there. Because the constant breeze was always kicking up a good dust storm. And we even had running water, is what I was told. And what I was told later was, no, if you want water, you run over there and get it. So, but it was actually very cool. Water was actually quite cool. It was amazing. And this, you can see the behind us here, this is the solar panel, and then the tank for the water tower and our storage up there. And then they fill up these buckets with water. And it's amazingly cool and refreshing. The one thing that the Malawian and the Zambian brethren love is to play netball and soccer. And one of the reasons they like this is, first of all, it doesn't cost much anything to have a place to play. You basically need a ball, and you need a couple bamboo sticks and some twine and to make you a goal or a net. And so they love playing netball and soccer. I did mention that one of the requirements was that the members had to bring their own food. There is no place to get food around here other than you know, going. Actually, there was no place to get food. Trust me on that one. There's no place to get food, so you had to have your food with you. And most all the Malawians are going to bring this food, and it's called nsema. And it's ground up cornmeal, but it looks like, when they serve it to you, it looks like a pile of mashed potatoes. And it tastes like nothing. There's no flavor to it, and it sets up in your stomach like cement, which is why they like it. Because one, it really makes them feel full. There is little to no nutritional value in it, but the Malawians and even the Zambians, this is their staple. They would not live without nsema. That's what they have. So everyone brings nsema out to the feast site. But if you want something extra, you have to purchase it. This is Fraser. He had some extra second tithe, and so he purchased these two chickens from the local chief. And Fraser was quite proud about this. I think he walked around with those chickens for at least an hour. And I was thinking, man, he's awful proud of those chickens. But what I realized was his wife, Jessie, was trying to get the fire going. And so the chickens didn't survive much past this picture, I don't think. But they were happy for an hour or so. But this year at the feast was the first time the church was ever able to purchase a cow. In the past, they've purchased goats for the feast as a special treat. But this year, we were able to purchase a cow where they could actually have some beef. It was an absolute treat for them. And so I announced this on the holy day, that after sundown, that cow that was up there was for the church members, and that we were going to have beef. And I was talking to one of the members, his name is Francis, afterwards about this, and he said, quote, "I'm still talking to my saliva." And I thought, what? And I thought about it for a while. And what he was telling me was, my mouth is watering. I'm talking to my saliva. He was so excited about being able to have beef during the feast. And so I was happy to leave before we ate the beef, because they butchered it there that Tuesday morning. And then what they did was they took all of the beef that they had, and then based upon family size, they allocated it out to the members of the feast so they could all have beef at the feast. But prior to the feast, they also did something that I thought was worth mentioning here. They planted various greens for the members that didn't have much, and they called this their subsistence farm. And this is on the church ground, not far from the picture where you saw the water tank. They had this subsistence farm. And by the time the feast would come around, their subsistence farm would be ready. They would have mustard, Chinese cabbage, grape, pumpkin, plus a bunch of other different plants. And so there was their subsistence farm during the feast. And the idea was that any member that needed some fresh greens could walk up there, pluck the fresh greens, take them, cook them, and eat them right then. You didn't have to sign up. You didn't have to ask anybody, no deacons, no elders involved. You could just go straight, pick your greens, and you'd have some fresh greens with your encima and with the beef that was provided, and have a tremendous feast for their families. We did have several group meals during the holy days and even on the Sabbath, which the congregation really enjoyed. The brethren would sit around for hours, you know, talking, laughing, eating. The Malawians love to laugh, love to smile. You'll see that from the pictures. It's hard to get smiles off their faces. Sometimes you'll see them and they look very stern, and all of a sudden that smile just breaks out, and it'll lighten up a room. But I'd like to introduce you to some of the members here in Malawi, because this is a different part of the one body that the Apostle Paul was talking about in 1 Corinthians 12. These are our brothers and sisters. They supplement us, brethren, as much as we supplement them. They often talk about praying for us, praying for our needs, while we also pray for them. All of us serving the head of the body, Jesus Christ. I introduce you to Mrs. Chandi. Now, Mrs. Chandi wasn't able to make it out to the feast site. This was taken on the Sabbath before the feast. She actually went to Blantyre to be with her children. And the reason I want to introduce you to Mrs. Chandi was, if you ever go to Lilongwe, you will have to meet Mrs. Chandi. She is the wife of the original pastor of Malawi back from the 70s. Has been around for decades and is a stable pillar in the church. And as I mentioned, she celebrated the feast elsewhere. But you would have to talk with Mrs. Chandi. Haitan Tungala. Haitan is a deacon and a longtime member of the church. He started also attending in the late 70s, has been around. He's been helped stabilize the church through various splits. I was over in Malawi during the 2010-2011 splits that were happening and the issues they were, and Haitan, as stable as can be, has been around for a long time and just a very, very stable member. He does suffer from extreme asthma. You can pray about that. I believe he worked in the forestry, or it was some with forestry agriculture, as I mentioned, slashing and burning. And as a result, he suffers from extreme asthma. So when Dr. Suckling was over there, he was able to give him some stuff that helps him, but it's only on a temporary basis. But Haitan Tungala is a very stable, longtime member of the church there. Also, this is Cephas and Patricia Chimpamba. And Cephas is a deacon, and he's a leader in his local village, which is just across the road from where the feast site was, about a 10-minute drive. They have four children. And the interesting thing about Cephas was, Cephas was in line to be the chief of his village. And when that time came, he had a decision to make in life. And he was actually studying at the time to become a doctor. And so he made the decision to turn down the opportunity to be chief of his village to become a doctor, because he thought he could do more for the people, providing medicine for them and taking care of their needs physically, than he could as the chief. So he turned down that, and actually has a operates a clinic there just across the street from their house, of which 90-something percent of the people that come there never pay a dime. He just treats them because he can. And I know Life Nets and some others have helped supply some medicine for Cephas and Patricia for their clinic, which they provide to members and non-members alike in that part of the world. Nestor Fury, she is a deaconess, well-respected within the church, long-time faithful servant. You would meet her in Lilongwe and, of course, out there at the feast. Another couple, Francis and Stella Ninkapola. They have two wonderful kids. Francis and Stella love to ask questions about the Bible. And it's not that they're asking questions. They love to study the Bible. And the reason being is both of their families are extensive Catholic backgrounds. Most of their brothers and sisters are Catholic priests or nuns. And so they are continually being bombarded with questions from them. And as a result, they have to stand on their own, and so they have to be able to answer these questions. So, and I'd met Francis many times over the years, and when I went to the feast, or actually Sabbath services, right as soon as service was over, Francis comes walking up to me, and he goes, Scott, in Exodus 35, it says, don't light a fire on the Sabbath. He goes, I read that, and he goes, but when you read in Hebrews 13 that Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever, he goes, explain that to me. And he wasn't sitting there trying to pin me down on something, but these are things that he needed to know. He needed to be able to understand that and explain that, because he also knew we were going out to a feast site where we'd be cooking. And was it okay to be cooking our meals on the Sabbath? And so he wanted to know that, but it was just one example of the questions that Francis and Stella would ask. And it was very inspiring, because they're asking from a desire to understand God's Word, to have that knowledge, and it was really a passion that was fantastic. Now Chifundo. This guy, Chifundo, his wife is Keti, Najua, I believe is the last name. Chifundo's 28, 29 years old, and he's kind of the youth leader of the congregation there. I've known Chifundo for back when he was a teenager. But it's hard to describe him other than he's got continual energy. The youth love him. I'm not sure why. I almost killed him at this last feast, and I'll tell you why. The Tuesday morning, after the holy day, of course, you wake up. You've been sleeping on a mat. Actually, I hadn't even woken up yet. But right outside my booth at 5 a.m., now let me repeat this. At 5 a.m., outside my booth, here's Chifundo. He's stomping his feet up and down because the booth next to us was where the youth were staying. And he's sitting there chanting, let's go, let's go, let's go. Time to jog, time to jog, time to jog. Let's go, let's go. And he was yelling at them for 10 minutes till every single teenager got up out of their beds and went jogging with them. And he made them jog out to the main road, back to the main road, and they ran down to the soccer field and played soccer until they had to get ready for church. And the youth absolutely love him. He is an absolute passion, and I think he's a teacher or a principal, if I'm not mistaken, something with education. So he does work with youth a lot, but he's just a ball of fun. Frazier and Jesse, and I won't even try to pronounce the last name. Frazier and Jesse, Frazier was the one that had the two chickens. They had a little extra second tithe. Jesse is the sister to Cephas. The Cephas is the doctor that turned down to be the chief of his village. Well, when Cephas turned it down, it went to the next in line, which happens to be Jesse. So Jesse is the chief of the village. It's about a 10-minute drive from where the feast site is. But they're a wonderful couple. A couple of the young women, Juliana Kacharli and Chivmumwe Kalima, These women have both been raised in the church. I know we first met them when they were in the early teens, and both could use our prayers. They have incredibly challenging stories, is all I can say. Chimwemwe, I know, was the oldest of four kids. We went and visited them at their house, and their house is not even a quarter the size of this stage, where the four kids and her mom and dad lived in a dirt floor. And I think there was two rooms. There was one room, and then there's a room where they slept. And I know her father has since passed away. But anyways, both these women have very challenging involvements in their lives, and could use your prayers, could use all of our prayers. Toko and Zaire, these were the two members from Zambia that were able to come over for the feast this year. They were the only two, as I mentioned, because the rest had already made plans to go to Lusaka. So the feast started on Sunday night. Well, Sunday afternoon, Toko and Zaire was making the journey to cross the border into Malawi. And then it's about 10 miles from the border to get to the feast site, and they were going to take some public transportation and get up there. Anyways, when they were crossing the border, they went and were trying to change their money. They don't share the same currency, and they got robbed there at the border. And they were yelling at the guy, and the guy was running off with their money, and nobody just watched it happen. And they didn't take all of it. They took most, I guess, half or more. But they were quite shooken up, and they're trying to work with the police, and it's a waste of breath, really, to even do that. But they were quite shaken up, and so they had contacted one of the members. And so Brennan and Miklas says, we'll drive over and we'll pick them up and we'll be back. And Brennan was given the message that opening night, and he said, we'll be back before sundown and we'll get going. So they take off in their car to go pick them up. And so we're waiting for them at the feast site, and sundown goes and it's darker and darker, and they still hadn't come back. And so then finally they come rolling in just past sundown. And Brennan and Miklas step out of the van, and both of them are physically shaking. I could see their hands shaking. And I said, what happened? And they said, well, first of all, they went over there, and they had to find Toko and Zaire, and they finally found them. And then they were driving back, and it's only about 10 miles between the border and where the feast site is, on a road that is pitch dark. And so by this time, it's already after dark by the time they found them and got them in there. And so as they're driving back to the feast site, they see a woman that looked like had been hit by a bus laying in the middle of the road. And so you can see it quickly with the headlights, and they passed, and so they turned around and came back. Well, when they came back, they saw that it wasn't a woman. It was a man dressed up in woman's clothes laying there. And so the thought was, oh, okay, he's drunk, something happened. Whatever. So they turned back around to come back towards where the feast site was. When they turned back around, came up to them, the guy sat up and yelled something, and 12 guys jumped out and tried to jump the van. And they literally made it out of there, you know, before they were jumped. And it was in a very dark part of the country. You couldn't see anything, and it's a part you normally would not be at night. But they had to be there to pick up a couple of the members to get into the feast. And so then they came and obviously were a little shaken up by that. And then we heard that's a common thing in that stretch of the highway, that they look for cars that are coming, get them away to slow them down, and then they'll jump them and rob them or something worse. But anyways, they did make it through there, and we were very relieved. And then finally, Brennan and Mikla Hilgen, and these are the two that we'll hear from after services. You know, Brennan and Mikla are not Malawian, they're not Zambian, but I don't think you could convince the members there that they're not. They've lived there for several years, and were serving the brethren there, and it really been adopted into their families. But Hyten, Cephas, and Brennan were the three men that were running the feast site. There was no elders involved. There was no church pastors. There was a couple deacons and another person, and that's what was running this Malawian feast site. There were many kids there. There's a lot of faces, pictures I don't have. But you can see why Malawian is known as the warm heart of Africa. I mean, the pictures pretty much, you know, show it. You'll see those smiles everywhere. Well, throughout every feast, brethren, we always hear feast greetings. And this year will be no different. So in 2 months, we'll be sitting at the feast somewhere, and you'll be hearing someone will make announcement, these feast greetings. And so I'd like to share the feast greeting that came from Malawi last year in 2018, because now that you've seen these pictures, I want you to have this in mind as I read this feast greeting. This is from the brothers and sisters celebrating the feast in Nkwazi, Malawi. Greetings from both Zambia and Malawi. Greetings from both Zambian and Malawi brethren here at the feast site in Nkwazi, Malawi. We've settled into our brand new Malawian style feast site with over 50 brethren. The days have been hot, but we have not stopped us from playing netball and soccer for hours on end. We are settling down tonight in our booths, thinking out brethren all over the world who have chosen to keep God's feast. Remember how they are always praying for us, brethren. They're thinking about the larger family. They're thinking about you and I. Love to you all. Have a wonderful Feast of Tabernacles. from Brennan McLaughlin and the congregation in Malawi. Well, during the feast in Malawi, I wasn't there to see this, but they have a talent show. And a talent show, if you've never been to a Malawian talent show, you still have something on your bucket list to do. This is something that you have to experience. But when they have a talent show, every single member in the congregation is expected to participate. And so it's not even an option. You will participate. And so the talents are, it's an eclectic event, to say the least. Imagine every single one of us coming up and sharing our talents, what kind of show we would have. Well, here's a note I received from Mikla describing this Malawian talent show. It said, she said, Malawian talent shows are amazing experiences. This year it started off with 2 minutes of dancing by the Chimpambwas and Brennan and myself, and in parentheses, we didn't volunteer. So as I said, you are going to participate one way or another. So it started off with 2 minutes of dancing by the Chimpambwas and the Hiljans. Then we saw a couple of dances, listened to a song, heard an informative speech on cholera. You share what talents you have. So an informative speech on cholera, watched an impersonation of a Chinese guy buying a cow. I would have loved to have seen that one. It probably wasn't politically correct, but watched an impersonation of a Chinese guy buying a cow, a couple more dances, a 30-minute long interview where two people were asked to tell their stories, how they entered the church, and then told they had to sing their favorite hymn, from heart. Couldn't look at the music. Then there was a stick-finding magician's act. I don't know what that is. Maybe the Hiljans can explain it. A presentation on the history of Braille. I'm sure that had everyone on the edge of their seat. Then an aerobics act. It was an amazing night. It was the fact that every single member was part of the body, and every one of them was going to participate and be part of the family. Well, after the feast, I'd received a couple messages from Haitian Tungala. After the feast, they disassembled all the booths, they disassembled the tabernacle, they took everything away, and got back to life as usual. So Haitian forwarded me a couple messages after the feast, and these were from different members, some quotes that they had provided to him. One says, "Our Feast of Tabernacles went on very well, and as we got to the seventh day of the feast, almost everyone felt a gap as they wished to say if it were day two. This clearly demonstrates how much members rejoiced during the Feast of Tabernacles. Please pass our best regards to the brethren." Once again, their concern for us, brethren. Another quote, "We have just had our feast post-mortem on this just-gone Sabbath. Basing, and forgive me for the grammar here, but I'm reading it as it came, basing on the comments made by members, one would not be mistaken to say that this year's Feast of Tabernacles was the best ever." Because it was a Malawian feast. It was one that they could do. This is how they would do it, but yet following God's principles, but having a Malawian feast. Well, brethren, we read earlier in from the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 12 about the unity and diversity in the body. And I hope this gives us a fuller understanding of that passage. This is more the unity and the diversity in the body. And towards the latter part of that passage, let's also remember Paul's words here. This is 1 Corinthians 12 and in verse 26. "And if one member suffers, all the members suffer with it. Or if one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it." Well, while the members in Malawi were celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles during the feast, they had some that were suffering at that time. Just prior to the Feast of Tabernacles, one of the members in the Lalongwe congregation, a lady named Mrs. Guza, was hit by a bus. She had incredible injuries, as you can well imagine, being hit by a bus. Prior to the feast, We had the opportunity to go to the hospital and to visit with her and to pray for her there in the hospital. And what I witnessed, and I really wish you could hear it from Dr. Suckling's perspective. Being a medical doctor and going to this hospital is something that has changed his life forever, and I can say it's even changed mine forever. But Mrs. Guza is staying, or was staying, at the Kazimu Central Hospital in Lilongwe. It's a quote-unquote free government hospital with deplorable conditions. When you first walk in there, you walk in the hospital, the very first thing you smell is death. And I didn't really know what that smelled like. And when I walked in there, I realized what that smelled like. And the reason it smells like death is you walk in through the morgue, and then from the morgue you actually go to the patient's wings, because most of the people don't even walk out of this hospital. When you're in there, there's patients everywhere. These pictures don't even do it justice, because the pictures I really wanted to take, I was too embarrassed to even take a picture of. But there were people everywhere, in every bed, every corner of every room. We went to Mrs. Guza's room, and there were 8 people in this room, and we walked up, and there was literally not even 2 feet between each bed. And so there was 8, that's how small this room was, and everybody was packed in there. And we squeezed in there kind of around her bed, and we're talking to her, and she's laying there on sheets that should have been burned, and has a blanket, and looks like she's ready to die right then. She had all kinds of broken bones, some internal injuries, and was just laying there just suffering. Even though this is a hospital, if you don't quote-unquote tip the nurses or the doctors, you will not get any service. So we had to provide her, one of the members actually provided her some money that she could tip the doctors and the nurses so she would even get any treatment at all. So we gathered around her bed and prayed for God's intervention, that she would find the strength to be able to walk out of there. Because on her own, she would not. And with the care she was getting, she was not. It was only through the will of God that she was going to be able to ever get up and walk out of there. And when we got done praying, she looked up and broke into the biggest smile I've ever seen. And it was just a comforting thing to see that smile. And then you look around at the deplorable conditions that she was laying in, and the fact that she was focused on God and what God could do for her was something that you couldn't get the smile off her face. But it was absolutely deplorable conditions. Brethren, as we close this service, I'd like to ask you something. What do our brethren, our brothers and sisters in Malawi, and even in Zambia, what do they need? Think about it. What can you give them? What can I give them? What does this part of God's body need right now, and how can we help? Our brethren in Malawi need one thing, just one. And what's that one thing that they need? The one thing they need is a new situation. It's plain and simple, just a new situation. Thankfully, God is providing that. And here in 2 months, we're going to be celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles, celebrating that new situation. A time when Jesus Christ will come and reign on earth. So let's pray more fervently than ever and more urgently than ever before for the return of Jesus Christ. And may thy kingdom come.